I remember one year you asked, I believe you asked me earlier on about what we did with the money. We always had to buy the clothes and stuff, but if we had any left, our parents usually let us buy what we want. I remember one year, probably in the later years before we quit picking cotton, that I had enough left to buy me a new bike. Got a neighbor to carry me down to, I believe it was a Western Auto store at that time, and I won't never forget it. It's a Western Flyer bike. I believe I bought it for like $39.95. She hauled it home for me on pickup. And I was tickled to death. It was the only new bike I ever had in my whole life. And I rode that thing till it wore out, I reckon. But most of the time, you didn't have much money left after you bought your clothes and stuff.
So you had to save up for a pretty good while to get the bike, huh?
Well, I had to save some out of each payday.
Yeah.
In order to have enough. A lot of times, too, we'd be picking cotton at a distance, you know, away from the home, and sometimes we'd go with people to pick that had maybe they'd have a big truck. I remember we had this one neighbor, she always drove a truck, and we was bad about, they had a lot of wild apricots that grew out in the field, and we called them maypops. And we'd gather stuff a sack full of them when we'd start home with these, because a lot of times we'd have that truck filled on that with cotton. We'd get to ride back there on the back, and we'd throw them maypops and hit stop signs when they come along, and it'd just scare her to death. Nearly, she'd drive and she'd nearly stop. We'd wait till we got right up on them stop signs. Them things would pop when you throw them. Again, no signs. I remember also we used to get fooling around every once in a while, you know, doing a little horse playing out there in the cotton field. We'd break off a limb, a long limb that had a cotton bowl right up on the end of it. You could take that cotton bowl and wind it up with your hand just a little bit, not enough to twist it off, but just to make it a little bit loose. And you could draw that limb back and sling that thing, or you could throw it a long way, a whole lot further than you could with you know, just throwing the bowl by itself in your hand. And I remember one time my mother was bent over picking, and the boys got to throwing them. I think he hit her in the back with one. She's about ready to get up and take the limb and wear it out on them, I think. But you could throw that thing a long way for just throwing back. We used to stand there and throw them. I guess I hadn't said much about the hoeing cotton. Now, I started hoeing when I believe I was about 10 years old. And my older people, they wouldn't hardly let you hoe any cotton because that's afraid you'd chop it down, chop the wrong thing down. Instead of cutting the grass, that's afraid you'd cut your cotton down. And you had to chop it out, what we call chop it, to thin it out. And I had a neighbor that they let me start hoeing at a young age, and I learned to hoe and become real good at it, I thought. I don't know what other people thought, but they never did complain about my hoeing, and I done a whole lot of it. And I've come pretty fast at it. I got to where I could, I try to stay ahead of everybody else. And a lot of times I'd get about a half around the head of them, and I'd stand, prop up on my hoe, rest, because they caught nearly up with me, and then I'd take off again. I thought that was a lot of fun back then, but nowadays, kids want to know what hoeing cotton was. I used to threaten to plant a couple rows just to make my kids hoe it and pick it before they could say they had to hoe and pick some cotton, but I guess I never did get around to doing that. And Now the cotton just about phased down. If you see any anymore, you have to go further south about it to see it. There's not hardly any at all on Sand Mountain anymore.
You're talking about hoeing and picking. Do you make more money hoeing or do you make more money picking?
Well, most of the time when you were hoeing, you worked for the hour. They paid you so much an hour. And I can't remember, but you probably made more of hoeing.
Because, well, you had to pay whatever they was giving. You got whatever they were giving a pound if you were picking, right?
Right.
But you got paid by the hour if you were hoeing.
Or the day. I believe some people pay for the day. I believe I have worked by the hour and by the day.
But in all likelihood, you could make more money hoeing than you did picking, probably. Might not have been much more, but you probably make more.
Well, a good picker could make more picking because, if they picked early to late, they would end up making more because their hourly rate was the low back then. You could make more by the pound most of the time, I guess. I believe you could.
What year did you graduate from high school?
I graduated from high school in 1967.
And what was your first job after you graduated?
The very first job was I went to Chattanooga, Tennessee, and got a job in write paper. They took big rolls of paper and put it on machines and cut it down and printed the lines and stuff on it and made writing paper and envelopes and stuff like that. And I only worked that job for 2 weeks, and I had all of it I could stand. And I got on a bus and come back to Scottsboro, Alabama, and hitchhiked on home. So that's about the history of my first job.
So you worked there for 2 weeks?
Right.
What did you do after that?
After that, I came back to Scottsboro, and probably 2 or 3 weeks later, I got a job in a textile mill. And I worked there for about 2 years.
All right, you're just out of high school when this is, you're getting these jobs. In the 60s, especially the late 60s, were a pretty turbulent time as far as the country went. Were you afraid you were going to get drafted to go to Vietnam?
Yeah, in February of 1969, I did get drafted. I'd worked 2 years in the textile plant there before I got drafted and was working when I got drafted. I got drafted in February of 1969, got a 15-day notice to report for duty. And I was inducted, on the 19th of February, 1969, in the U.S. Army.
And you weren't the only one, I assume, from that around that area where you lived that was getting drafted.
No, there was lots of them at that time. A lot of people I knew, friends I went to school with and everything. A lot of them got drafted into something the same year. In 69 is when Vietnam was starting to heat up, and that a lot of people got drafted then.
So where did you get sent after you finished basic training?
Well, I went through basic at Fort Benning, Georgia. And I went to my advanced training in Fort Gordon, Georgia, which was a MP school, military police school. I went through that, graduated as a military policeman, and I came down with orders for Vietnam, and I'd already called home and told my parents that I was going to have to go to Vietnam, and the next day, the company commander come out there and he said, well, we've got so many people here, I don't think it's like 12, 15 people, that their orders had been changed, that they were going to be going to Lackland Air Force Base in Texas to train at a dog handling school on how to handle dogs to do police work with. And then again, and another day later, my orders were changed again, and to go to Korea. So I went to Korea, and it was also a hardship tour of duty at that time, even though they weren't fighting like they were in Vietnam, but they were up on the what they called the DMZ, the demilitarized zone. That was between North and South Korea. There was some fighting and killing up there, but not nothing like it was in Vietnam. And I had to spend the tour of duty in Korea was 13 months. I stayed 14 months and 8 days. What I did, I extended to 38 extra days over there. Because at that time, if you come back to the States with 150 days or less, they gave you an automatic drop. You didn't have to do any stateside duty. So
they let you out after you did the extra days to get 150, so you could get a discharge when you got home.
So I'd have 150 days or less when I got back to the States.
Okay.
So I did, and I did never pull any stateside duty during my military career.
So as soon as you got back, you got to come home.
Right.
Is there anything that really stands out from your time in Korea that you really remember?
Well, I remember from the time I left the States to the time I got there to the time I got back, because I remember the plane ride going over there. We only stopped one time. We stopped in Dakota, Japan, and it was really foggy, and we landed between two strips of water. The pilot couldn't see the runway till he done come with nearly his wheels was nearly on the ground. He went in by the tower and by the light, and scared us half to death, but he had a smooth landing. And then they wouldn't let us get off the plane. We wanted to get off the plane and look around in the airport, and they wouldn't let us get off and wouldn't let us on board the plane. But in Korea, all the time I was there, I was on a Nike missile site. We pulled security duty as MPs, and we were stationed with an artillery unit way down about 200 miles south of Seoul, about as far south as you could go. Down that part of the country, it was a lot warmer than it was up on the DMZ where the other people were. It was cold up there. It got a lot colder in the winter. But all of the people over there actually lived in poverty. They didn't have anything. They grew, their main source of food was rice. They planted a lot of rice in the summer in the rice paddies. But they didn't have hardly anything to eat. So therefore, they thought all of the American people were rich. And to them, we were. Anybody that had a little bit at all had more than they had, and they made about everything they wore. And but other than rice, they just didn't have much to eat. Now on that Nike missile site, we pulled security, and every day they would raise those missiles up. The artillery unit would and put them in a firing position and test them to see that they would raise up and everything. And I remember one time we had this sergeant that he sent all the men, he evacuated the area. And I was pulling security on the gate, and he come down there and told me that he was evacuating the area, that they had armed one of those missiles. He's gonna have to go in there and disarm it. And it had so many minutes before it would go off. And fortunately enough, he did disarm it before it went off. If it hadn't, we'd all been history. because
were these nuclear weapons?
Well, during that period of time, the arms agreement the United States had with Korea, there wasn't supposed to be any nuclear weapons in that country, or any automatic weapons of any type.